Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about a specific experience in their life, letting us step into their shoes so we can learn better how to love our brothers, sisters, family members, and neighbors. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of The Christmas We Didn't Expect by David Matthes. Life is full of unexpected twists and turns, and this has been particularly so in 2020. But the most unexpected and significant event in the history of the world actually happened over 2,000 years ago when God Himself became one of us in the person of Jesus Christ. These Advent reflections help us to lift our eyes to the wonder of the Incarnation and worship the one who came to save us and make our futures certain. Pick up a copy of The Christmas We Didn't Expect at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Today, my guest on By Faith is Dawn Barton. She is the author of the new book, Laughing Through the Ugly Cry. Dawn has been through a whole lot in her life, and one of those difficult circumstances that she's walked through was cancer. In our conversation, we zero in on that time of her life, and she shares about her cancer diagnosis, the chemo treatments that she endured, and why she now says that cancer was a strange and unexpected gift. Dawn calls herself a joyologist. I love that. And she shares how we can all mine our pain for hope and joy. Here, friends, is my conversation with Dawn Barton. Thanks, Dawn, for joining me. This is so fun to get to meet you.
I'm so excited to be on. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's especially fun because I just finished reading your book, your new book, Laughing Through the Ugly Cry, and Finding Unstoppable Joy. And that's like exactly what the book is about.
Did you do that? Did you laugh and cry?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you have really hard stuff in there, but then it's funny and it's lighthearted and it's just very colorful. Like, I wish I could show people the book because it's just full of color. There's a lot of pictures and it's just very happy.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how I wanted it. Right. I do. I actually love the book, and I would love to take credit for the publisher. Thomas Nelson gets all the credit for that interior. It's a gift book. So it's a full color book. Yeah. I love it. Can you say that about your own book? Yes. I love it. I love it.
Well, you should love it. Well, first, before we get to more about the book, I would love for you just to introduce yourself for anybody listening who doesn't know you.
Yeah. Well, my name is Dawn Barton, and I am now officially an author. But prior to this, I was 30 years in sales and marketing, and I was a top 10 producer in a multi-billion dollar market. Oh my goodness. Can I speak this morning? Do you guys have those mornings where you just are like, I was a top producer in Mary Kay Cosmetics, actually, everybody knows. And I took a leap of faith. I had a dream. God said, you're going to write a book. And I said, oh no, I'm not. And here I am with a book. So, but that is my background. That was 2.5 years ago. And I'm a mom. I'm actually a grandmother to four. We have a 13-year-old and a 30-year-old daughter. And we live kind of in the country. And my parents live in our guest house. My mother-in-law lives in our house. And we have 5 dogs on the property, 3 cats and 2 horses. It's like in a partridge in a pear tree. Yeah.
That is a lot right there.
Yeah.
So are you saying that you left Mary Kay to go into kind of the new area in that, if I remember reading correctly, speaking is included in that?
Yeah. Okay. I've been speaking for a long time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did. I wasn't a writer. I didn't even journal. I wasn't somebody who took pleasure in this art of writing as many people do. So to feel that God was calling me to tell this story, I just was certain he had the wrong person. Yeah.
So how did the book come about? Did someone approach you and say, we want you to write your story? Or you just pursued that after you had that literal dream, right?
I literally had a dream and God said, wake up, you're going to write a book. And I can remember this back and forth. And he said, wake up, write this down, wake up. And I wrote some things down. And the next morning I expected to wake up to just this, these, you know, like these words. And instead I woke up to 6 words, but I knew exactly what they meant in the chapters that they should be associated with. And I, the next day, Googled, how do you write a book? And I started writing. I literally did that. And God just, he put the exact people in my life that I needed through every step of the process. But to say that I knew what to do, to say that I had clarity on the journey would be the biggest lie ever told. I had no idea what I was doing.
Uh-huh. Well, you did it. It's out.
Here it is. I did it. And I actually have kind of a miracle story because I sent it to a friend when I had the book proposal done. And I said, is this right? And she said, can I send this to my agent? The agent signed me within 24 hours. I knew that my publisher was supposed to be Thomas Nelson Publishing. That's who I wanted. And I told her to only present to them. And she's like, that's not really how we do it. We usually, and I said, that's who it's supposed to be. And they offered me a contract shortly after.
Wow. Well, yeah. I'm glad you wrote it. And based upon the title and the colorful, you know, people can't see that. Hopefully they'll get it and they'll get to see it. But it's really about hard stuff. It's about trials and that you've walked through in your life. Each chapter is kind of a lesson of joy that's come out of most of them really hard things. And so I would love for you to kind of give the listener some context and tell some of those, sure. you call them dark holes that you've had to crawl out of. So can you give us mm-hmm. maybe some context for your life?
Sure. Well, over a span of many years, I am somebody who has lost a child to a rare bacteria of pneumonia. And then 6 months after she passed away, someone broke in the house and I was raped and they caught the man and went to a full jury trial and he's in prison today. And then I have had stage 3 triple negative breast cancer and I'm doing great now. I lost my sister most recently to breast cancer as well. My mother had a brain aneurysm that burst and my husband battled with alcoholism and he's more than 5 years sober now. So I've had plenty of trials and, you know, and other things as well. But through all of those, I learned incredible, wonderful lessons about life, of course, but also there was just joy mixed into it. There were so many moments of laughter in the middle of heartache. Now, I'm not saying that right when you lose a child or anything like that, you're laughing. That's not what I mean. But there is always, I believe that you can be in a place of joy and still have hard times.
Mm-hmm. And you call yourself a joyologist. I love that term. What do you mean by that?
Well, I would love to tell you I came up with that. I did not. Oh. So I was telling one of my dearest friends, I was just thinking about leaving my position. I was kind of a big fish in a little pond. And I said to her, what am I going to tell people that I want to stand on tops of mountains and talk about joy and God? I'm going to look like a lunatic. And she said, yeah. She said, you're a joyologist. And I was like, that is exactly who I want to be in this season of my life, is a joyologist. You know, somebody that helps people to find joy in the most unlikely of places.
Uh-huh. So you say in the book that you became a Christian at 39. I mean, you also described that you grew up in a religious home, that you had some spiritual background, but can you tell us where faith fits in as we move on into this conversation about pain and joy? When did you become a Christian? How does that all fit in this story?
I would say that I was always a Christian. Because, you know, I was raised with it, you know, I was raised with it, just that's what we believed and that's what I knew. But I did not have a relationship with the Lord until much later. And I didn't, you know, give myself completely. But it went in my 20s when I lost my daughter. I broke up with God, as I say. God never broke up with me, but I definitely did. I was so angry. And I didn't want to love a God that took babies from mommies. And then I had the rape happen. And I was in such a dark, angry place. And I didn't have that strong faith to know to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So by the time I started the cancer journey, I did have it. And it was a very different journey having that faith, you know, growing in my faith that 10-year, it was a 10-year gap. And God just put the right people in my path, in my life, around me, for me to bring me back.
Mm-hmm. But was there a specific, you said a specific age that you made mm-hmm. that decision to go all in. Was there something that happened that where you were like, yes, I'm all in now? Or was just...
No, I think it was just a layering of, and to me, it was kind of like that moment of baptism that I decided at 39 was sort of that crescendo of what I had been probably feeling for a few years before that, you know, just that I think it's that symbolism of I am all in, you know, it's just, I need it, that moment of like, I am all yours forever and ever. I surrender completely.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could talk about a lot of things from your life, but I really want to zero in on the cancer. Because so many people experience that, or they know someone who is or has. And so my theme for this season of my podcast is we want to go into other people's lives and experiences and learn how, what is that like? What are some things maybe we have misunderstood about it, but also how can we love the people in our life who are experiencing that same thing? And so you talk in your book about your diagnosis, and that's really what most of the book is about, is kind of learning joy through the pain of cancer. But can you take us back to the day you were diagnosed and just tell us about that and maybe your initial thoughts and reactions to that?
Well, I always love to tell the true story of this. When I first found out I had cancer, I've always struggled with my weight. And there was a second that I truly thought, well, I guess I'm finally going to get really thin for a season. That literally did go through my head. And I will tell you, that did not happen. It did not happen at all. They gain weight now when you get that. I gained 40 pounds. So
is that a pretty common side effect for people going through treatment? Okay.
Yeah, because of all the steroids and stuff like that. Okay. So yeah, I did not drop any weight. But anyway, it did all come off very rapidly. But at the time, my husband was in the Navy, and he was deployed to Bahrain. And the day that I found out, everything happened for me very quickly for no other reason than I had a lot of friends in the medical field. So we found the lump, and then like the next day I was getting a biopsy, that kind of, you know, it was so rapid for me. And I know that unfortunately doesn't happen for everybody, but when they did the biopsy, my nurse was originally a little, just not terribly kind. She was very curt, and she got, after they did it and while they were doing it, she started to get super, super friendly. And I thought, oh, this is a really bad sign. And then I got a text message from a friend of mine that was in that same radiology group. And he was the husband of one of my best friends. And he goes, I heard it didn't go well. So that is literally how I found out, is through a text message. And I had to laugh at that, because I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, how often do you find out you have cancer on a text? And that's not, you know, formally how it happened. And the next day I got a phone call. And it was on my husband's birthday. So I had to call him in Bahrain and tell him that I had breast cancer. And we made a decision as a family for him to stay overseas, because honestly, if he had come back, he'd still have to go back to work. So I still would have had, he's an airline pilot, so I still would have had to get all the help. So it was still the same. So we decided for him to finish out his tour before he came back.
Mm-hmm. You seem like a pretty naturally optimistic person. Anyway, yep, but same. I would imagine that moment, those first few days, weeks, especially with your husband overseas, and you also had a very small child at the time, right?
Yeah, she was four. I don't know that very early on, within my first few days, I had a surgeon tell me as I was leaving his office, he said, oh, and by the way, you know, you're not going to die from this, right? And which, by the way, was a totally stupid thing for him to say. He was so inappropriate in saying that, but I'm very grateful for it, because I never questioned was I going to die through most of that journey. I wasn't. And I think that's what a lot of people are thinking. All of a sudden you're getting this rush of all the things you wish you had done. You did, you know, you're questioning your mortality at 100 miles an hour. And I didn't really go through that too terribly much. I knew that I was going to be really, really sick for about a year, and then I could do this. So I was just so focused on breaking down that year into just the triumphs of each phase of it.
Mm-hmm. And what was the treatment plan that you had to, what did you have to go through?
Yeah. So I had, six rounds of a chemo. I had a breast cancer called triple negative. So it's not really one you want to have. If you want to have one that's fed by hormones, because they know how to treat that better than they do the one that is not, which is what I had. And so I had six rounds of a chemo called Red Devil. And they call it that because it's red, actually. It has a red color to it. And I had that every 2 weeks. And then after that, we moved to the one that was supposed to be much easier for me. And in the world of, it's called taxanes, taxols. And I was supposed to have 12 rounds of that. And I got to round 9. And at that point, I was so sick. I had no hair, no fingernails. No, I was just so sick. And to where my husband had to wheel me in a wheelchair for that, to get chemo at that point. And I remember telling my oncologist, could I get the last 3 doses all at once? Because I just couldn't do this. Wow. And he said, it'll put you in the hospital. And I said, I'm okay with that. I just literally can't do this anymore. And it did. It almost killed me, put me in the hospital. I had a horrible reaction. But after that, no, after I started to get well from that, we had about a month break. Then I had a mastectomy. I went to MD Anderson in Houston. And then after that, about a month after that, I started with radiation. And radiation is, so chemotherapy is where they're actually injecting, liquid medications into your body. And then the radiation is where it's like a laser, they're radiating that part of your body. So you're not feeling it. And it's very fast. You go in for like 2 minutes, lay down, get zapped, and you leave. I did end up burning really bad from it, but I had about 37 rounds of that.
Oh, wow.
And I did it every day, Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. So it took a few months.
Wow. So your husband, I guess you mentioned he was there at some point, but you talk in the book about your friends and how they came alongside you during all of this. And I would love for you to talk about that. What did your friends do for you that was super, super helpful? But also you give a perspective about friends showing up that I thought was pretty interesting. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. And it was all started by I saw a Facebook post and the lady wrote, now that I have cancer, I know who my real friends are. And I thought to myself, no, you don't. That has nothing to do with it. What you do see though, is who has the spiritual gifts of caretaking and doing those types of things. And God lets them shine in those moments. But And sometimes I joke that maybe I wrote that chapter as a trying to let myself off the hook, because I am not the person who will bring you dinner, who will care for your kids, clean your house. It's just not, it is not one of my gifts or my strengths when friends are in need. And none of my best girlfriends did that. And I didn't question their love for me. I just knew who they were as humans. And it didn't mean they loved me less. I think we have to give some grace that just because we are going through a hard time doesn't mean that our friends have to behave in a certain way. We have to give grace that it's our hard time and we're going through it. You know, a good example is that I had a friend who was going through something really difficult, cancer actually. And I know she later said, I can't believe I didn't hardly hear from you. What she didn't know was that it was in the height of the Craig's alcoholism. Mm-hmm. It was, my world was falling apart. Nobody knew. I could barely come up for air. And I was just struggling to get through another day in my own life. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. People just don't know what to say or do. And they are so scared of saying and doing the wrong thing that they end up doing nothing. But you have got to give grace, because it is not a reflection of how they feel or how they love. Mm. And that we just have got to love more and give more grace in those situations.
I love that perspective so much. It was really a heart check for me when I read that, to realize I sometimes have a script that I want people to follow because it's what I would do.
Right.
They love differently. And so can you describe, maybe we can all think about those people who are caretakers, but what are some things that people did that they don't have the gift of caretaking, but they still minister to you?
Well, one of my favorite things I will say was getting cards. I know that sounds like a little kind of obvious, but I really did love that because it was something that it could be in bed with me and I could read through them and that kind of thing. And the other thing, one of my favorite things is one of my friends, I couldn't go out. And so she brought an awards night to me. That was pretty funny. But aside from the highlight moments, the things that I loved were those who, everybody was sort of walking on eggshells around me. And I remember one person started telling me something. She goes, oh, but I mean, your life is much harder right now. I don't even know why I'm saying anything. I so much craved authenticity for my friends. Like, just my favorites were the ones who would just climb in the bed and lay there and talk to me and laugh and complain about their husband and complain about their kids and do the normal life discussions that we sort of do. But nobody would be real and authentic with me. And I wanted that so much. Mm. So that would be something. And just to look at me and say, this sucks. I'm like, yeah. Instead of, you know, some sweet, perfect scripture quoting kind of thing. I just needed real stuff at that moment. Mm. And I'm not saying scriptures. That's not what I mean. You know, I'm trying to say that I think we desperately seek realness in a moment mm-hmm. of pain like that.
Yeah, because it seems like it would add to a sense of isolation if everyone's walking around like they don't know what to do. They're on eggshells. It right. seems like it just kind of set you apart, like you're this alien and
right.
you need actual intimacy and relationship more than anything.
Yeah, I did love my friends sort of barging in. Now, I wouldn't say that all the time, but I kept saying no, 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 no to everything. And luckily I have some bossy enough friends that they were just like, no, we're taking over.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
good. I did appreciate that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you wish people, so we're this whole in their shoes theme. What do you want people to understand? You wanted them to be able to walk in their, in your shoes related to cancer in what way?
Well, I would tell you that it's, I think sometimes cancer is harder for those on the outside than it is on the inside. And I don't mean from a physical perspective, of course it is. But when you're the people on the outside, I know that it's very, very hard. But from the person on the inside, I felt like I had so much taken away from me. The I get to moments of life, you know, the driving your child to school all of those kind of, you know, getting up and fixing her a snack. I was in bed mm-hmm. so much. And I desperately craved normalcy in life and in my world. I just, that would be the number that the biggest thing that I think people don't understand. Somebody in that position loses all of the, I get to moments, you know, just the things we complain about, the mundane of the everyday life, they're gone. And, because all you know, you're fighting this cancer inside you and this medicine, and it goes in these cycles. If you're super, super sick, then you feel better, then you're sick, sick, sick again, and then better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a hard thing. And I think we all handle it differently, but I do think that there's immense power in mindset. And I do remember my oncologist saying that to me. He said, he actually gave me a huge number. He said, I think it's 80% of it's your mindset. So, which I wouldn't say that because I mean, I think your meds are a little higher than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the chemo is probably doing a little higher than that. But that always stood out to me is that attitude of just doing, you know, this, I wouldn't say joyful, positive attitude. It's a little hard to be that when you're wanting to hug a toilet, right? But mm-hmm. this, I definitely had this focused battle mentality of like, you won't win, I will win.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, another perspective you say in your book, and you just say it outright on the first sentence of a chapter, cancer was a gift. You said, mm-hmm. I don't know how else to say it. Cancer mm-hmm. was a strange, unexpected gift. And I would love for you to explain that.
There's a lot of reasons it was a gift for me, but one of them, of course, was perspective. And one of my favorite stories to share is that during the time of radiation, I was going in for my first time of radiation. Sitting across from me was a woman. She was probably in her 50s and her hair was curly and her face was full of color. And I say that because I was at the point of, I'm still bald. I'd been through a bunch of treatment. I look pasty white still, all of those. And she said, is this your first time? And I said, yes. And she goes, oh, it is so hard. And I was like, what? And I'm thinking to myself, my oncologist said this would be easy. He said this would be, and she's like, your first week will be okay, but then it is so hard. You're going to be so tired and worn out and burned. And I was just completely freaked out by the time I was walking in for my first treatment. The next day I got there and across from me was a woman who I couldn't even guess her age, maybe 70s, and so frail and so pasty white and bald and just heart, you know, obviously very ill. And she said, is this your first time? And I said, no, it's my second. She goes, oh, honey, this is nothing. This is the easy part. And it just gave me perspective that isn't it funny that the one who had been through 10 times more, and it was so much, she was at the end of her treatment. So by that point, I did know she was super burned and she was miserable, but yet she still chose to sit across from me and fill up my cup with joy versus fear. And those are the lessons I learned, and, you know, just one of the many lessons. And another sweet gift was my husband seeing me for the first time over Skype when he was in Bahrain. Mm-hmm. That was one of the sweetest memories of my life to this day. And I wouldn't have had that moment with him had I not had cancer. Mm-hmm. And I got to see how the gift of people and the kindness and the, it was, I still say it all the time. It was a gift. Do I want to do it again? No.
Right.
But it was a season filled with gifts on mm-hmm. a million different levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you got to tell us the story. I know because I read it in the book, but you got to tell us the story of when you saw your husband for the first time.
I have a hard time telling the story without crying. So, but I had just shaved my head and, we were going to be Skyping, and you have to understand, I'm somebody who actually, in the gifts of life, I have the hair gift. I loved my hair. I don't have the metabolism gift, but I have the hair gift. And so much of my, just who I was as a woman, I think was so tied into hair as it is, I think with all women. So, I was humiliated. I felt ugly. I felt disgusting, to be honest. And here I was about to Skype with my husband for the first time. And, my computer was open. He opened his and, you know, it opened up and saw his face. And immediately when I saw it, his eyes widened and he goes, "Oh, you look so beautiful." Wow. And I put my hand up on my head and he goes, "No, take your hand down. You look so beautiful and you look so good." And he never flinched. There wasn't a look of pity. There wasn't anything. And you know, your husband's eyes, you know, that look. And for him to have said it the way that he did to me, it still remains one of the most precious moments of my life.
I love that.
I love it too.
What a guy.
I know. He's great.
Well, you learned how to bless your sister who also went through cancer. Mm-hmm. And was that, she got cancer after you? Is that right?
She did. And she was I was stage 3. So I was a more advanced cancer than she was. She was stage 2. So I never, never in a million years thought I'd lose her, you know, because I thought, well, I was stage 3 and I lived. So of course she'll live. When I was diagnosed for the first 4 months, I had a card every single day for 4 months. It didn't stop except Sunday, you know, when the mail didn't come. And one day she and I were speaking and she said, "I just got a card from Paula," which was my next door neighbor. I said, "You did?" And she said, "Yeah, it was my first card." Aww. And when she said that, I was like, "What?" And I just assumed the same thing was happening to her. And so right after that, we hung up. I unfriended her on Facebook so she didn't see anything I was doing. And I went on Facebook and I just did this quick 3-minute video. And I just said, I gave out her address and her email. And I just said, if you could drop I told the story. If you could drop her a note or a card. Mm-hmm. And that was like on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And on Monday, she opened up her mailbox to 47 cards.
Wow.
And she just said, "I can't believe you did this. Can't believe it." And she cried and cried. And every day she'd call me and she'd read these cards and the scriptures that were sent and how much it just shifted her and spoke life into her and just how much it fed her soul, you know, just the love that she felt. And it was so important. And because she passed away probably 3 to 4 weeks after that.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry for your loss. Yeah. Sisters are something special. So I'm really sorry. I also love that example because I think, man, just where we are in life right now, culture, we need people like that who will mm-hmm. encourage, who will take time to love, to share joy, to share in hard moments. And I love that example. I think that's something we all can do. It's just if someone comes to mind, whether they have cancer or something else is going on, is to take the time to be a blessing to them.
I think whenever we do have people on our minds like that, have you ever noticed that when you have somebody, you can't kind of get them off your mind? There's a that's the God whispers, the God nudge, you know, act on it, move on it. And I try to really listen to that these days. I try to really to move on it.
Yes. Because I think sometimes we think, oh, well, my reserves are low. And right now, everybody's reserves are low. I don't have anything to give. But what I keep finding is when I'm in pain or I've gone through something difficult or my reserves are low, if I give to someone else, my reserves get filled up. It's kind of weird. It's like a paradox of when we serve, God fills up our tank. When we bless, he blesses us. And it's not always in the same manner, same way, but there is joy that comes when we, even in our hard things, we reach out to other people and don't get kind of sucked into our own little world.
I totally agree. And I think one of the greatest gifts in giving is that heart feeling we have, you know, of doing the right thing. It just, I really do. I love giving. It makes me feel, I feel a little selfish because it makes me feel so good, you know?
That's why you're a joyologist.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard, I have a friend actually who just went through cancer treatment, and she said that she was really surprised that when her treatment ended and the doctor said, you're cancer free, there was a whole new reality for her that she didn't expect, that there were some negative things, some side effects from treatment. There's new space to fear because you know what can happen. But also I think she would say she has this whole new perspective on life in the future. That's a positive thing. So I would love for you to help us understand, how does cancer change you? What are there things that you continue to deal with, or are there gifts that you know that we don't know because you've experienced this? What can you tell us about this life after cancer?
Well, the first thing I would say is one of the things you touched on is that right when you finish with treatment, one thing they do not talk about that I wish they did talk about more is that most people go through a pretty heavy depression. And I don't think we talk about that, because when you're in the battle of cancer, that you're just like, okay, next thing, next thing, next thing, next thing. And you're so you're not contemplating life at a grand level because you're just trying to get through your next treatment. Mm-hmm. Then it's over and you kind of look back and go, oh, what just happened? And then, you know, the emotions hit and I had a really hard time coming out of it. And then from a physical side, I still was taking pain. One of the biggest side effects for me were my legs. It's very common, the pain in my legs, which sounds crazy that that's a side effect from chemo, but it was. And so I was still taking something for that probably for a year after I finished treatment. But I don't think people know that. I don't think people understand that. My oncologist told me it would take 2 years to sort of recover from the chemo. And it definitely did. It definitely did. Hmm. I don't think a lot of people kind of know that. But with all that being said, one of the great things that come out of it is that you get this perspective of, I get to live life. You know, I won this battle. I get to be here longer. I get to love more. I get to give more. I get to be more. You know, I get to, you know, is my life going the way I want it? Is this the impact that I want in my legacy to be as a person? You get to really overthink all of those things in a great, wonderful way.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. Well, that's what I want to close with as a question. Okay. So for us listening, maybe we are not experiencing cancer, but we all have pain. We all have something. So as a joyologist, I want to hear from you. How do we mine our pain for joy? What are some things that we can do to recognize joy, to choose joy? You know, teach us how to do that.
Yeah. So the first thing I would tell you is that it always sounds so cliched and a little bit ridiculous even to say it, but joy truly is a choice. It's just like when you get up in the morning and you decide to put a shirt on, or these days maybe it's another set of pajamas or whatever. but it's a choice to put it on each and every day. Just like it's a choice to to choose love and patience and those things. These are choices. So I think it is a daily choice. You have to focus on joy before you have that feeling of joy. And for me, there were seasons that it was get out of bed. You just need to get out of bed today, you know, take a shower today. So it was baby steps, but it was an on purpose that I have got to move into something different. You know, we are not created to live in sadness or pain. We are just not. Are there seasons for it? Yes, but that is not God's intention for our lives. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I would tell you is your relationships. Just, this is so important to joy. And the first relationship being your relationship with God and Jesus. That is, you know, if you don't know him, you totally should, because he's super fantastical. Yeah. I mean, just going through hardness with God and without it, it would just a whole different, it's so different. It's such a different feeling. It's a different sense of peace, but that relationship. And then the second is the relationship with yourself. You know, you've got to love yourself. If you don't love you, I think it's hard to get other people to love you when you don't love you or like you, you know, you don't like yourself. So then the other relationships are you surrounding yourself with people who fill your cup or people that drain it, you know, just be really careful about your relationships. And the last thing I would probably say is that you get to write the story. And what I mean by that is you get to write the story that's behind you. And what is that story going to be used for? How are you going to use it to decide what the future story is going to be? If you decide the story behind you is a pitiful, you know, sad, miserable one, then that's what the future one will be. If you decide that there has been, for me, like the tsunamis of pain, and how will I pivot to use this for good and to help others? How I believe that we go through the hardships that we do because we're meant to help the next person. When you keep all of that inside of you, it doesn't bless another person. Our hardships, the least of things that could come out of our hardships is that we should bless people, right? So I believe that if we can decide that past story, that hard story, is one that will propel the future story to being one of good and, you know, one of joy, that it makes all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what you've done with your book. You have written your story so that we can learn and we can choose joy. It's called Laughing Through the Ugly Cry and Finding Unstoppable Joy. And I'm so thankful for your willingness to share part of your story with us. And yeah, I encourage everybody to go grab that book.
Thank you. I've had so much fun being on here with you. And I am most active, by the way, on Instagram. So you guys come on over. It's Dawn. Oh, I sound like a pirate when I say Dawn R. Barton, but it's Dawn R. Barton. So,
okay. Well, I'll link to that yeah, on the show notes and the book. So thanks so much, Dawn.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to By Faith. Friends, if you're enjoying By Faith, I would be so honored if you leave a review for me on iTunes. I put a link in my show notes where you can do that. Thank you in advance. Join me next week for the last episode of 2020. I'll be chatting with Caroline Saunders. Caroline is a pastor's wife, and she's going to take us all into the shoes of a pastor's wife. How does she experience this role? What are the challenges? What are the joys? And what does she want us all to know about how we can love our own pastor's wife? You know, this is a subject dear to my heart, and Caroline speaks well for all of the pastor's wives out there. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.